Good afternoon, everyone. I would like to welcome everyone to the meeting today. Can everyone hear me clearly? Members of the public should remain seated throughout the meeting and should not speak. Everyone should ensure their mobile telephones are either turned off or switched to silent. The use of mobile devices for recording is not permitted. The proceedings of the meeting will be audio recorded, except where the Council is considering any exempt matters. The recording equipment is linked to the microphone system, so please ensure your microphone is switched on before speaking. Members are reminded that they are personally responsible for any comments they make at the meeting. I would remind councillors of their obligations under the Councillors' Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interests which they have in any item of business before the meeting today. If you have such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business that it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the table for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in the vote. Okay, members, you are very welcome to the Audit Committee. Apologies, we've got two apologies, sir. Who are they from again?
Councillor Devlin and Hardy.
And we also have an apology from Gerard Byrne today. On the chairperson's remarks, I'd just like to take this opportunity to welcome the new members of the Audit Committee, Councillor Byrne and Councillor Mulgrew. So very welcome to your first committee meeting. And I'd also like to take the opportunity to thank or to congratulate Councillor Moran on his appointment of chairman of the council. Congratulations. That's the chairperson's remarks. Declaration of interest, we've already taken that, so I take it there's no declarations of interest to be declared. Item three then is to agree the start time for the Audit Committee meetings that are scheduled for 2018-19. So the proposal, members, is that the starting time, the customary starting time of 2 p.m. be retained, so would members be content to still go with 2, yeah? And are members content to go with the meeting dates that are scheduled? Okay, thank you, members. Yeah. But members, there may be need for the 27th of June meeting to maybe move that back, so if members are content to maybe just keep that flexible at this stage. But the other meetings we will take as fixed. Is that okay? Thank you. Item four then is the action sheet from our last meeting, which took place on the 11th of January 2018. In terms of the actions, there's two actions. If we take it page by page first for accuracy, are members content with the accuracy of the action list? Okay, so, sorry, our meeting was the 26th of April rather than the 11th of January. I should have picked that up too, sir. All right, okay, thank you. So there's, I didn't realise the format of this. So it's the action sheet for the meeting on the 26th of April 2018. And if we take it page by page, just for accuracy, so page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, and page 6. And members, in terms of the action sheet, it's proposed to remove all the actions from the action sheet with the exception of the outstanding issues. And the outstanding issue is a status report on the grants database be brought back to this committee. And you can see that really that action is still progressing. So that will remain on the action list. And the other outstanding action is the policy on managing the risks of bribery and corruption. And it was agreed that the conflict of interest policy would be tabled at a future audit committee meeting. And again, that policy is currently being worked up, and when it's ready, it will go to SPNR for approval, and then it will be reported to the audit committee for noting. Okay. So, are members content? Could I have a proposal and seconded for the action seat, please? Councillor Moran proposed. Second. Second, Councillor Moran. Thank you for that. And then, members, on to item 5. And item 5 is the Audit Committee's annual report for 2017-18. The annual report, which I have compiled, summarises the key activities and highlights any key issues arising throughout the year. And this report will inform the governance statement, which is contained within the draft annual accounts for the council. And members are asked today to consider and approve the annual report for 2017-18, and it's also recommended that the approved annual report be reported to council. So just members quickly to just go through the annual report. The annual report gives an overview of the audit committee activities for the financial year 2017. And during the year, the audit committee met on 4 occasions, the last meeting being the 26th of April 2018. During the year, audit committee carried out a self-assessment of its performance, and the actions, 3 actions were considered by the committee and agreed. One of those was really to try for as far as possible to continue with continuity of members from year to year, and I'm pleased to say that really and thanks to the political parties for largely doing that for this year, because it allows obviously members to build up their expertise, to avail of training, etc., etc. An in-house training course was agreed, and there's an item on the agenda covering that today, and again, really, just one that we put on the previous year too, just to strive to try and get papers out as timely as possible. And again, thanks to Jared and to Sarah, because that is working very well at the minute. And this is a committee that only meets every quarter, so you want to obviously try and get as much into that quarter's meeting as possible. So that does mean that some reports have to wait, but try and get as many as possible out as early as possible to give members a chance to read. And particularly for those members who are unable to attend the meeting, at least they've got the papers. The financial statements for 2016-17, the committee reviewed that and were pleased with an unqualified audit opinion from the Northern Ireland Audit Office. And was able to recommend approval to council by the deadline of the 30th of September 2017. In terms of risk management, again, very good progress was made this year on risk management, and risk management is now embedded throughout the organisation. There's 11 corporate risks, and there's 5 corporate risks that have got high residual scores, and those corporate risks obviously receive the most attention from the audit committee at its meetings. Internal audit, we rely on internal audit to provide independence assurance to the audit committee, and during the year there was 9 internal audit reports presented to the audit committee, 6 of which received a satisfactory assurance, and 3 which received limited assurance. The 3 limited assurance reports will be followed up with the internal audit recommendations during the coming year. Pleased to say as well that internal audit and their annual assurance opinion was able to give a satisfactory opinion to council, and that's the best that you can get. That was very good to be able to report that during the year. And then really the follow-up review of internal audit recommendations, again good progress was made with implementing the internal recommendations. The audit plan for 2018, the internal audit plan for 2018, was also approved at the April meeting, and the external audit strategy for the 17-18 financial accounts was noted at the January meeting. And also, this committee's remit is to scrutinise the performance improvement arrangements for the for the council, and again we received a number of reports during the year in relation to that, and again the performance improvement arrangements for New Morne Down Council received a standard unqualified opinion during the year. So I would just finish, members, by just again acknowledging and thanking members for their support and contributions throughout the year. As I say, the Audit Committee has been able to deliver its remit in full, and also to thank the officers for their openness and engagement throughout the year, and to thank internal audit and external audit for their assurance opinions during the year. So thanks for that. So members, any comments, questions in relation to that? Okay, Councillor Moran.
Yeah, Chair, I just really just want to put it in record, our thanks to yourself for the guidance that you have given us over the year and assistance. Okay. So thank you for your work.
Thanks for that, Councillor Moran. So could I have a proposer and second then for the annual report? Councillor Moran proposed, and Councillor Moran second. Thanks for that. That takes us, members, on to item six, and that's the financial statements and governance statement, and Dorina, you're going to give us a presentation. We also have got the accounts as an appendix.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Members, we're, you'll see we've included in your pack today the full statement of accounts for the 17-18 year. We are very mindful that this is both a large and complex document. So I'm going to take you through today a presentation which is somewhat of a summary of the key items within those accounts and what would be known as the primary financial statements. I would like to say at the outset, what we're presenting today are the draft accounts to you. We're not asking you as an audit committee to approve the accounts at this stage. We're presenting the accounts to you at this stage to inform you and to give you the opportunity to influence any changes or to comment in any way on the accounts. It will be at our September meeting then that we will focus on any material adjustments or any material changes to what is coming out of today, and they can arise either by changes that officers will put forward over the next couple of months or by any adjustments that will be recommended by the external auditors, the Northern Ireland Audit Office, as they conduct their audit. So I'll take you through the presentation, I'll signpost you into the actual accounts along the way, and then we're happy to take any questions on any aspect of the accounts, even any items I haven't touched upon. So we'll try and take you through as best we can. In terms of the format of the accounts this year, members, you'll be aware that the accounts are presented in a style as directed by the Department for Communities under what's known as the Accounts Direction, and that's something which we presented to you at a previous meeting. It comes out under a local government circular. The Accounts Direction tells us the methods of accounting for certain things, and one of the things that the Northern Ireland Audit Office will do is they will check that we've complied with that Accounts Direction as part of their audit. So in due course, they will provide you with an assurance that we have followed up. What we're presenting is the style as directed by the department. And there have been a number of changes this year to the format. There's been more focus on enhanced narrative reporting, and hopefully you'll see that at the front of the accounts. So there's much more detail in there. Previously, we were recommended to look at CIPFA Code of Practice and FRC guidance in this area, and that's something that we've done. And I'll take you through certain of the documents later in the presentation. There has been a change which is known as telling the story, and this has resulted in a new primary statement referred to as the Expenditure and Funding Analysis, the EFA. And certainly from my perspective, remember, this is a very welcome change because it has allowed for streamlined segmental reporting, and it really allows for these accounts to bear more relevance to our own internal reporting lines. And hopefully for those of you that sit in SPNR, you will be able to see a linkage between the management accounting information that we present to you and the financial accounts. Again, I'll guide you through that as we go. So that has been a key change to the format this year of the accounts. They do look somewhat different, and we have had to change the presentation of last year's comparatives into this format as well. A number of items just to bring to the attention of the Audit Committee. We have had quite a significant fixed asset revaluation in the year carried out by Land and Property Services, and you will see the results of that reflected in the figures. It's been a very, very significant piece of work where Land and Property Services have looked at a large proportion of our land and buildings and revalued those accordingly in years. So I'll take you through later some of the larger, more significant movements. Also to say to you at this stage that the general power of competence, which was brought in under the new legislation, has not been used this year by the Chief Executive. This is something which, had he used that, we are required to disclose in our accounts. So you will not see any disclosure because that has not actually been used in year. We have had no changes to our accounting policies to bring to your attention, and we have no significant changes to council's business to bring to your attention. What you will see with regard to council's business is at note 28, we do highlight significant trading operations of council, and we have chosen to highlight there our car parking facilities as one of our significant trading operations, and you'll see both the income and costs associated with those at note 28, which is on page 104 of the accounts. Similarly, at note 29, we are required to disclose our agency services, and we're disclosing two relationships there, one in respect of the Newry Bid Company, where we are involved in invoicing and debt collection services on behalf of that organisation, and a second relationship with the CAN, which is the Collaborative Action for the Natural Network. This is an SEUPB funded project. It's just new in year, and Newry Morning Down District Council are the lead partner for 11 project partners. So those two relationships are disclosed at note 29 of the accounts. Similarly, at note 30, we disclose any related party transactions, and this is typically where council has transacted with parties where councillors may have a personal interest, and we also disclose there a related party transaction with ARC 21. As you'll be aware, we are one of the partners, the councils involved in the ARC 21 project. So moving into the narrative part of the accounts, the narrative report actually starts on page 1 and not page 3, as it says in your slide. And what you'll see there is an overview of the council. This is the area that we have enhanced this year, and hopefully given the reader of the accounts more information by doing so. You, again, guided by the best practice guidance, we have tried to make it very clear how we're linking the outcomes reflected in our accounts to the strategic objectives of the council. So you'll see in there members reference to our corporate planning objectives, to our community plan. We have enhanced our recently launched local development plan, and also we have made reference to the performance objectives. Again, you will see disclosed our governance and assurance frameworks and the associated risks we are managing as part of that. We also have included a section on our financial performance, and again, that's not only looking at what has been achieved in year, but that's looking forward as well and reflective of our future uncertainties and our future performances. So the aim of all of this is to try and give the reader a real understanding and put into context the figures which are presented later on in the document. One of the key reports, and one which sometimes gets some media attention, so I highlight it to you for a number of reasons, is the remuneration report, which is on page 29, apologies, not page 17. I do want to just highlight to you, this is a remuneration report which discloses the remuneration of councillors. You will see allowances, travel and subsistence. We reflect that in the accounts in totality. So the total amount received against the total number of councillors. However, again, as directed by the department, we are required to include a link to the council's website, where you'll be aware, councillors, that each of the alliances are published per individual councillor, and we circulated that to you in advance of putting that onto the website. You'll also see contained within the remuneration report the remuneration of senior employees, so the any salary and benefits in kind. Senior employees really refers to our chief executive and the directors of the organisation. So names and salary brackets are included there. We also include any exit packages of staff in bands and last year's figures to compare. And there's quite detailed disclosure on the pension details relating to all our staff and our senior staff in particular, all contained within that remuneration report, again the format of which is guided by the department. And then we move on to the governance statement. This is an important statement for the committee to consider. It's a statement which the chief executive will sign in due course, and when we come back at our meeting in September, we will be asking this committee to recommend that the governance statement is a true reflection, and recommend that it goes forward to the chairperson of council and the chief executive to sign. What you'll see, again, sorry, it starts on page 13 rather than page 9. We have disclosed here that our governance structures are now well embedded, and hopefully for those of you that are on the committee over the course of the year, you will have seen evidence to support that claim. We've also disclosed our procedures around risk management and our assurance framework. Again, they've been well embedded in year. We disclosed to the reader that we have received a satisfactory assurance from our internal auditors in the year. And then we also disclose our three limited assurance audit opinions that were received in year. These were, as you'll know, in the areas of planning, IT disaster recovery, and the governance of grants in the strategic programmes unit. As well as disclosing the reasons for the limited assurance rating, you will note that we do inform the reader as to the steps that we have taken and are taking to improve controls in those areas. It's important to say at this stage, the governance statement, while these accounts run to the 31st of March, our governance statement runs right up to the date of signing, which will be towards the end of September. So this is an area where we may make further changes between now and September as we progress more work in these areas. We also are required to identify any key areas of risk. And again, you know, this committee will be au fait with our corporate risk register. We have highlighted five areas which we believe represent key areas of risk going forward. And again, we have given the reader some detail as to where the risks arise in those areas, and importantly, what steps we intend to take to try and manage those risks going forward. So the five areas identified are relation to procurement, IT transformation, the somewhat unstable economic and political climate that we're in, GDPR, and also our proposed involvement in the Belfast Region City Deal. So that's all contained on pages 26 to 28 of the document. And now we get into the numbers, and this is quite difficult to read on screen, and hopefully the handouts might provide you with a bit more detail. This is the expenditure and funding analysis. This is one of the primary statements now of this council, and again, this is the new format, the new presentation, which I referred you to previously. What is new about this is that we now can provide the information to the reader in the same format as to which we internally report. So, councillors, those of you that are on SPNR will know that we report our management accounts along our directorate lines, and similarly now we are reporting our financial accounts along the same lines. If you look at the first column, at the very left-hand side, and you will see a surplus for the year reported there of just under 2.5 million. And again, those of you that sit in SPNR will know that we reported a surplus of in and around 2.5 million by way of management accounts. So that is the linkage that this new format is trying to achieve. The next column along is basically then where we make adjustments between the funding and the accounting basis. This is contained in more detail in note 4 to the accounts, but this is typically areas where of depreciation, revaluations, we make pension adjustments, and our MRP adjustment goes in here, our minimum revenue provision. What you will see is there's quite a significant adjustment there at the Active and Healthy Communities Directorate, and the reason for this is that this is so high is due to depreciation and revaluations arising from our leisure centres, and I'll go into those in a bit more detail later on. So the other line which is of importance to you is along the very bottom of your screen, your closing general fund line. And what you will see for this year, for the 17-18 year members, is that you started the year then with some 8.9 million in your general fund, and you are closing the year with 11.4 million. So that's the increase to the general fund of that 2.5 million surplus. All of this obviously is subject to audit and may change, but these are the figures that we're presenting at this stage of the accounts. And then we go on to our balance sheet. This is split across two slides simply because of the size of the balance sheet. And what you'll see is, in overall terms, the net worth of this council and net assets are standing at 81 million. Your fixed assets, we're a very fixed asset rich council, they have increased, if you see your top line members, from 157 million to some 187 million. In year, so an increase of 30 million. Our additions of some 17 million are contained within this, and then we have had a number of significant revaluations and some other accounting adjustments in there as well. To give you a flavour of the revaluation exercise carried out by Land and Property Services, we have there will be revaluations upwards, there will also be revaluations downwards, which are also known as impairments. You'll not be surprised to know that the Newry Leisure Centre has been revalued upwards by some 8 million. The Down County Museum has been revalued upwards by some $2 million. The existing Down Leisure Centre has suffered an impairment or a revaluation downwards of some $4 million. And this building that we sit in today, the Downshire Civic Centre, has been revalued upwards to the tune of $2 million. So there are some of the material or the significant revaluations that, coupled with additions, have seen an increase in your fixed assets of $31 million a year. The next item down, you'll see is some long-term debtors, and this reflects a debtor for gas at Ocnagun Landfill. You'll also then see some inventories or stock, and again these are our general items that we include in our stores, that we would hold stock items in stores, and also relates to fuel stocks held at the year end. Your short term debtors of some $6.3 million, these are our trade debtors, our government grants, and VAT debtor is also included in that figure. And then you'll see our cash. We're holding cash at the year end of some $2.6 million. When you compare that figure as to what we were holding last year, some $7.8 million. Again, SPNR members will be aware of our treasury management approach has been to try and internally borrow as much as possible. There's no real incentive for us to stockpile cash given where interest rates are currently, members, and you'll see that reflected. We're trying to keep our cash balances as low as possible and to use that as efficiently as possible as coupled with borrowing. We have assets held for sale at just $50,000 at this point, and this is a site that we have at Fork Hill, which has been identified and is actively marketed for sale. Other things then to highlight to your attention are the borrowings. They feature on two lines, members. You have short-term borrowings of some $5.4 million and long-term borrowings on further down of some $58 million. So in total, our borrowings are $64 million versus $59 million last year. And again, you'll probably not be surprised as our capital program has increased, and with the leisure centre bills in year, that you're seeing an increase in the amounts held for borrowings. Our short-term creditors again stands at $9.5 million at the year end, and what you'll typically find included are trade creditors, amounts owed to government departments, and also our payroll at any given point. At the month end, we will obviously have a amount owing on payroll. And the other significant item then is our other long-term liabilities, $37 million. This is essentially our pension provision, members. So all of that essentially shows a net worth of $81 million. Then the bottom half of the balance sheet, if you like, again adding to $81 million, is focused on our reserves. So what you'll see there, members, is your general fund balance of $11.4 million, as we've highlighted to you before. We also have an amount of $1.2 million, which we've identified as set aside for closure of landfill. And these are both what are referred to as usable reserves. This is essentially something that we can use going forward. We then also have some unusable reserves, and again, this is where you will find our pension provisions, and also this is where a lot of our accounting adjustments for fixed assets and for pensions will go through these unusable reserves. So that is the key items in the balance sheet identified. Again, the movement in reserves we've been through, members. If you look at the bottom line of this again, you'll see your net worth of council of $81 million. You'll see your general fund balance, which we are available to use subject to keeping some set aside for a rainy day, and you will see your 1.2 million, which is ring fence for landfill, giving you a total usable reserve of some 12.6 million. It's also just good practice to point out to you members any provisions which the council is holding. You'll see at this year end we're holding provisions of 4.5 million, the largest of which is a 4.1 million provision for the closure costs of Drumnakelly and Auchnagun. Again, this is driven by accounting convention to provide for these significant costs. We have a staff cost provision for overtime on holiday pay, and we also have a provision for future costs of running local government elections going forward. We aren't holding any provisions for any legal cases ongoing. They're not considered at a suitable stage to do so, or either they're adequately covered by insurances, so there's no significant legal provisions held. Another two notes which have been of interest to this committee: we are required to note in our financial statements our payments of suppliers, and it's something which is a standing item on this agenda. We report it to you quarterly. For the full year, then, we are reporting some 85.5% of invoices were paid within that 30 calendar day target. Committee members, you will be aware that we're trying to reach a target of 90%. That has fluctuated up and down in year, and but for the overall year, the average has been 85.5, and that's what's reported. You'll also see at note 24, we are reporting a contingency with regard to the ARC 21 project and the residual waste treatment project, and again, that's something that we're required to do. So the next step for this committee is the draft accounts were submitted to the Department for Communities by the 30th of June, which is a statutory requirement. The Northern Ireland Audit Office have commenced their audit of those accounts, and that will be ongoing throughout the summer months. The accounts are made available for public scrutiny from the 31st of July to the 20th of August, and a note is on our website to that effect. The Northern Ireland Audit Office will aim to complete their audit by mid-September, which they've highlighted to you previously. And then the Audit Committee will be required to being led by the results of that audit of the Northern Ireland Audit Office to recommend that the Chief Executive and the Chairperson of Council signs the accounts by the 30th of September, which again is a statutory deadline. The next meeting of this committee is scheduled on the 20th of September, and at that stage we will have the findings of the Audit Office, and hopefully that will allow this committee to make that recommendation. So that is the presentation with regard to the annual accounts. Obviously, there's a lot more detail in the accounts themselves. Happy to take any comments or questions on either the presentation or any of the underlying detail. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thanks for that, Drina. Any comments, questions to Drina at this stage? No. So members,
yes.
Sorry,
just for clarity, it's a lot to dig in. I suppose it's more detailed than the SBNO accounts that we got. Just questions that I've been raising with SBNO, and I just want to make sure that it's right in this. I suppose I've got the holder reading there in front of me. See, when you're talking about from 2017 to 2018, the assets held for sale, is that assets that are held and then subsequently sold off between the year because it drops by $500,000? If that's the case, then should the capital receipts not show because it's blank right across that, or is that just going into reserves? Because I have it fixed in my head from SVNO that we sell off an asset that can only be retained as a capital receipt for further capital projects. So I'm confused why capital receipts is nil when there's a decline of $500,000.
Sure. the assets held for sale, again, it's just defined by as to how we define an asset held for sale, and it needs to be something we've identified for surplus, as surplus, and are actively marketing for sale. So the both of these refer to one asset at each year end. So at the 31st of March 17, the 575,000 figure was the Strangford Road site, which we subsequently sold to the Education Authority for the new Down High School. And then this year we are holding and actively marketing a site, the Padro Dornan, I think it's right, in Fork Hill.
Yep.
So that's what they refer to. So they are two distinct assets being held and actively marketed at the year end. With regard to the, in relation to the Down High then, if we sort of follow that through, we have then subsequently sold that piece of land from last year, and as you say, we have received monies for that. What's the best way of identifying it sitting in there?
If you go to note 12, the capital financing requirement has been reduced by the 575, and that will affect the MRP calculation when we calculate that going forward on our four-year plan. So in essence, we will be in a position to transfer the 575 to capital receipts reserve, which is below the line in the unusable reserves. So it never goes above into the usable reserves, but you can use it to reduce your MRP on the four-year plan going forward.
So sale then, if you'll use to reduce the MRP, or put into capital receipts, or reduce from the capital over and on that one.
Yes, on
so it's effectively.
I agree. Mm-hmm. Just a couple of wee, and I think there may be housekeeping things. Under the councillors, allowance is paid to councillors. It states we have 44 councillors for both years.
Mm-hmm.
Just wondering why it's.
Because you had a number of councillors left and other ones were replaced, so there were actual 44 individuals who were in receipt of a councillor's allowance in the year. So that's where a member has left a political party and another member has joined, etc. So there were 44 individuals who were in receipt of a payment in the year.
Just didn't realise we'd switch that many round in 2 years.
Yeah.
With two this year, just wasn't.
Yeah.
But so, and then there's no on the remuneration of senior employees. Roland Moore at the bottom seems to be getting 43 million.
Hmm?
Worth every penny, is right, Charlie? Yeah.
Okay, there's nobody told me. Oh, yeah, I don't know what's happened there, Mark, you're right.
Nobody can spoil it,
yeah, complete typo there, I don't know what's happened there.
Yeah,
no, the left-hand column is right, so the Roland only, obviously this runs to the 31st of March, so, you know, obviously we're only picking up.
I assume that's what he got paid, in the, with the 43 should be.
And complete title. Thank you for that, Mark.
Yeah, and the bit then referring to Adam and his remuneration, has that been expanded out to a year, 1 year equivalent, or is that what he actually got?
That's what he actually received.
No way. 6 months? Is he here? Or did he say longer?
No, he was here from...
Almost 9 months, isn't it?
Almost
9 months, right, okay. I knew we extended it and then he finished it early, so I wasn't sure what the
time was.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, not just.
I drove a non-gear.
I don't really have time.
Not 1 minute,
sir. Thanks for that, Councillor. And any other just comments? Councillor Byrne?
Just one brief point on the senior employees. The bonuses, the chief executive's bonuses, performance bonus for the year, is that counted in the wage? Because I know that's a separate 5k performance bonus at the end of the year, and surely that should come under the bonuses, or is that just lumped in there with the...
There was no bonus received by the chief executive in the year?
None. Over the 5 years?
There is an increment.
Yeah.
So it's part of the salary, so it's not...
It goes into the salary.
But there is a question over the final increment, which we'll talk about in a couple of months' time, and a couple of weeks' time, but it's unconsolidated, and there's an issue over it at the moment where there's whether it is part of it or is it a one-off payment, and there is a level of debate on that at this point in time.
Okay, it's just only raising a question from the previous meeting recently, not in Castlereagh, where we were talking about the chief executive bonuses.
And they were probably referring to that last payment, yeah. Which they reckon there is legal queries over how you do it and how you pay it and whether you should pay it or, you know.
Okay, cheers.
Okay, members, any other questions, comments? Dorina, could I just maybe ask one question? Now, it's page 36 of the papers or page 7 of the accounts. And it's just the key components of the council's assurance framework. And in there, it suggests that really the audit committee reports into SPNR, whereas really I think the audit committee should report directly to council.
Yes. Right. Well, that's an adjustment that we need to make to that table, the language of that flow and property. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Councillor Muir?
Sorry, Chair, there was one more thing that I meant to ask you. But the relationship between the lowest paid and the highest paid, the 5.7 ratio, does that fall in within accepted terms? Or is there even a band that we should be aiming for?
No, again, that's a disclosure which we're required to put in, and you'll see, last year we're reporting 5.74, this year 5.7. Every local council does have to do this, so we could compare, but we're not given any target or it is what it is. But you could lift everyone's accounts and compare it if you wish to do so. But
one of those sort of wet lettuce things that government makes you do and means nothing.
Impossibly comment.
I forgot you were there.
Very meaningful.
You're making luck, you're getting marked. How about Councillor James?
Okay, members, so...
the accounts are so much fun. I did promise.
So members were asked to note the accounts at this stage, so members content to note. And I just thank Drina for her presentation. I think that was a very useful way of getting through the very detailed financial statements. Thank Dorina, Ken, and all the team for all the work they put into preparing the accounts. They're very technical and clearly takes a lot of work to do. So thanks for that. Members, so we'll move on to item 7, and that's the corporate risk register. And Dorina, you're going to
Yeah. Sorry, Chair, just before the officer comes in on item 7, can I ask that all of the risks that have been identified during the last review and the next review date are the exact same dates? Should that be correct, that they're all the 3rd of July 2018, that you would be carrying out the next review, even though it was last reviewed on that date, just before you went into it?
I think that's just probably a typo. You'll be aware this is just reviewed by the SMT on the 3rd of July, so we had to get the papers out very quickly to meet this audit committee. SMT review them quarterly, so we'll need to just push that on to the next quarter date.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, in terms of the corporate risk register, members, you'll all be aware of our format from now, and really then the cover paper sets out for you the key changes. We've obviously updated actions and in some cases dates were appropriate. The SMT reviewed this on the 3rd of July, just on Tuesday this week at our meeting. And the key changes are there at section 2.1. So with regard to corporate risk 3, we've actually slightly reduced the residual risk there. There's been a lot of training has happened since our last meeting. We've had our procurement policy out, but we are still very mindful that there is still quite a significant risk there. So reduced slightly, but still scoring quite highly. Similarly, corporate risk 4, non-compliance with legislative requirements, we've actually increased the risk rating in there. We've had a loss of key personnel in the period, and we also have the GDPR regulations, which came into force at the end of May, as you'll be aware. With regard to corporate risk 6, planning, again, we have increased slightly the risk rating there, and that's very much linked in to receiving another limited assurance internal audit report in May 18. There have been other minor changes. The only other one I would highlight to you is with regard to corporate risk 11, which is the risk which incorporates the current political and economic climate, and we have added in a new potential root cause there, which is around the position we're in with permanent secretaries not able to make decisions in the absence of a minister. And again, as FPNR members will be aware, that is something that has affected the business of this council and may affect it in the future if there's not any changes in that regard. So again, we've added that in, been cognizant of that. Happy to take any questions or comments, Chair.
Okay, members, any questions, comments on the corporate risk register? Okay. Drina, could I just maybe just ask one question, and it's in relation to the IT risks, I'm just wondering, really, you know, there's very, very little detail on the mitigating actions, and I'm just wondering whether, you know, maybe for the next meeting that could be, padded out a bit, just to show what the actions, because I think it's really just referring to the IT strategy. I'm assuming there's a number of key components within that, you know, all leading up to obviously the full implementation. And we're worth maybe just seeing really progress against those.
Yep. We can do that, Chair, and that probably ties into some of the recommendations of internal audit in their report in that regard.
Yeah.
So, that's something that we'll do for the next audit committee.
Okay, thanks. So, members, happy to note the corporate risk register. And item 8 is prompt payments. And Ken, you're going to take us through
that paper. Members are asked to note this report, which is comparing the statistics of prompt payment of the new council against to that of the previous two legacy councils. The prompt payment statistics for the first quarter of the financial year ended 30th of June is currently being compiled. The statistics for the quarter ended 31st of March, we have shown you, we have reported those to you, and what that is showing is that overall there was 5,569 invoices, of which 4,912 was paid within 30 days, 563 was paid within 10 days, and there was 657 paid outside of 30 days. the average number of days taken to pay an invoice to a supplier is 22 days. I actually got an email over lunchtime which has given me the figures for the quarter ended 30th of June.
Mm-hmm.
I will not give you the invoices, the number of invoices and whatever, but the important percentage, 90% of the invoices were paid within 30 days, and the average number of days taken to pay suppliers was 20 days. So there has been an improvement, as we had hoped, through changes that we have made to the to our policies, and that is being reflected in the numbers. We had been asked from the previous audit committee to have a look at how prompt payment statistics have gone from the old councils and where are we now in the new council. This is pictured for you in this graph, and it is interesting as the blue line is quite interesting in that the new council adopted the accounts payable system operated by Newry, with all the suppliers from Legacy Down being transferred onto that new system. So the blue line really is is where it starts, and the grey line continues. So there has been an increasing improvement over the last 2 years as to where we've gone with prompt payments. Happy to take any questions.
Okay, members, any questions for Ken?
Just really a comment. Sorry, Charlie.
Go ahead.
It's great to see that the figures are back up to the 90% again. We haven't seen that from 2016. And I suppose we're the Legacy Down and the ones from the Down end. You can maybe understand from that graph why we were so exercised about getting those figures up to the high. So, you know, congratulations and thanks to your team for getting that back up there. Thank you.
Okay, Councillor Casey?
Yeah, I sort of concur with that. I mean, prompt payment is the bread and butter of small business, and it's important to keep them above the water in the current, you know, economic climate. Even that said, I mean, the government targets, you know, as much as possible within 10 days. And I know we seem to be improving, no doubt about that. But there's a huge amount, 88%, within 30 days. Can we reduce that even further? Is that possible? What's preventing us from doing that?
The process that we have, it takes a number. The time that we receive an invoice, it's the date of the invoice. It could have taken a couple of days to come into the organisation. If you have an ethos of getting invoices processed as quickly as possible without checking that there was an order, that the correct price, checking that the actual goods have been received, and taking that time to authorise that invoice properly, in my opinion, takes a number of days, which makes getting an invoice processed in 10 days very difficult. If you want accuracy and no mistakes. Yeah. Every invoice is authorised by the budget holder. But the average time taken to pay an invoice that last quarter was 20 days, so it is, it's quite good.
Okay, members, any other questions, comments?
Hey, just a wee simple compliment to Ken and the team there. I mean, that's brilliant. I mean, to be holding a good sort of 10% variation steady there is very good, and you're climbing again, so brilliant work. Well done.
Yeah, okay, thanks, Councillor Harvey. Okay, members, item 9, fraud and whistleblowing. Doreena?
Thank you, Chair. Again, members, this is a standing agenda item. Hopefully the format is quite well known to you. You'll see at 2.1, we're reporting no new suspected fraud cases since our last meeting. We have had one new whistleblowing case, and that is detailed for you in the table on page 140 of MinutePad. We also bring to your attention, you'll see on the whistleblowing register, there have been 3 cases closed in the period, and they are greyed out, brought to your attention as case closed, and then they will disappear from the register following a highlighting it to yourself at this audit committee. We're also just drawing your attention at 2.1 to the fact that the 1617 NFI report has now been published, and it's something which features later on the agenda. The 2017-18 National Fraud Initiative exercise will be commencing in the coming weeks, and this is something which we again will take part in, and we will upload data to enable that any national fraud initiative, any findings that relate to our own data to be part of that exercise. So we will keep you informed in the future of how that works out. So happy to take any questions or comments.
Okay, members, any questions, comments, or members happy to note? Okay, thank you. Item 10 is direct award contracts. Ken, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Direct award contracts, sometimes known as single tender actions, are when a contract is awarded to a supplier without going through the full tender process. It is good practice to bring to the attention of the Audit Committee a list of all those direct award contracts during the period from your last meeting, containing an explanation as to why the items were purchased without going through the full process. There were 10 contracts awarded by way of direct award with a value greater than 5,000. The total of this list totals 166,029. I do not propose to go through the list line by line, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Okay. Members, any questions?
Yeah. I may be wrong in my thinking, but I thought there was a recent law change that for fibre optic, that other organisations would be allowed to actually install it, and BT weren't the only ones now able to provide the service. So, for example, utilities like your gas and everything, that other companies can now actually install that connection. Phoenix Gas, for example, could price you that and doing everything, but actually there would be alternative options. And I'm not sure the same was for fibre opticness. I may be wrong, but I'm not sure that is since being changed to allow competition within Northern Ireland.
Not sure. Councillor would have to go back on that. I know the detailed paper went to FPNR on that from Johnny, but I would have to go back and remind myself. I don't honestly know.
Okay.
We can come back to you outside of the meeting.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Councillor Sharma. Councillor Byrne?
Yeah, just before going to the point I want to raise. Yeah, I know at the presentation of NIE here that there was competition opened up for wiring homes up and providing power to homes. And that's a new pack centre to people, so probably Councillor Shavin's going along the same lines, the fibre optic. It's more process, and one question on the bottom one. The floor that was replaced in Collyhanna, I'd be well aware of it through the Sligo and DEA. when you go out to tender in the process and you don't get anybody answering back because it was a specialist call for Bulls, can the council then just select, as you're stating here, you don't have to go because you have went and selected a company? Is that the normal process? You can go out and just handpick a company if you've got no tenders in? And the second question, the turnstile remedial works on the bottom one. I'd be familiar with this in Leary Sports Centre as well, and a new building. And I was there a number of times when the turnstiles weren't working. It was absolute chaos. People going through, was a health and safety risk and that. But I would expect that falls back on the people who had built the leisure centre. And to see that Felix O'Hare come in and repaired the turnstiles, whatever went faulty with them, and there was an amount of 5,000-6,000 paid out. That shocks me, because from the word go, there was always problems with the turnstiles. They ended up, they left the gate open and people were getting in and out, and it was a health and safety risk. But surely when somebody comes back in to fix it and you have to go to tender straight away, surely they have to cover the cost of that, because it's only new equipment. So I'm surprised on that, at the bottom, the £6,000 was paid out on that. But I just want to know for the process that if nobody comes in by the tender, can the council just go out and select one, or do the council have to go out and go to two or three to try and get the best quotes themselves?
With regard to the Collyhanna one, where we for this level, we have gone out and identified a number of suppliers who can deliver the floors. So we go out and invite a price in from those. But I suppose if in the case where we went out to tender and no one tendered, well then we could identify a supplier who can meet our needs. We would always ask our officers to do a value for money test before approaching and document on file before approaching a supplier, one single supplier. There would have to be a value for money test on file. With regard to the turnstile remedial works, again, something I'll follow up, Councillor Byrne, you'll be aware that there has been some expenditure at Newry Leisure Centre where we are pursuing costs against the contractor or some of the other companies involved. So in regard to the turnstile issue, I'd follow up and come back to you on that one as to whether that is one of the areas that we are pursuing recovery of costs.
Okay, members, thanks for that, Councillor Byrne. Any other comments, questions? No? So members happy to note item 10. Item 11 is update on audit recommendations. Serena?
Yeah, again, this is something which we keep the audit committee, we keep reporting to you how we are progressing. So the 2.1, you'll see that in relation to those audit recommendations arising from the 2015-16 year, we last reported to you the first table in the position of April. You will see then that the position now in July is demonstrating progress. We now have 34 fully implemented, 3 partially implemented, and we're reporting none that are not implemented at this stage, so they're all in progress or implemented. And then the 16-17 audit recommendations, again, you will see progress between the April and the July position, so moving from 26 that were previously reported fully implemented to 30. And again, you know, they're not implemented. You can see that there are less that are yet to commence. We also include in this the NIAO recommendations arising from last year's audit. And again, all are in progress to some degree. So the underlying tables give you the detail behind these. And obviously, in due course, internal audit will and external audit will follow up on many of these and report to you and give you an assurance over how we're progressing in these. So happy to take any comments or questions.
Okay, members, any comments, questions for Drina? No? Drina, just to welcome the progress made. It's great to see that really the 15-16 audit recommendations, but there's none now that is not implemented, and that 34 have been fully implemented, so that's an excellent result. It's good to see that really that good progress has also been made in implementing the 16-17 audit recommendations. So thanks for that. Item 12 is an update on procurement. Ken?
Thank you, Chair. Members are asked to note this report outlining the work that has been undertaken since your last meeting in respect of addressing the weaknesses within the procurement process as identified in previous internal audits. As we had reported at your last meeting, a new procurement policy had been ratified by Council on the 8th of January this year. We advised that training on the new policy and suite of documents had yet to be delivered to all the officers involved with procurement. Training has now been delivered to all officers, concentrating on drafting business cases, drafting tender documents, tender evaluations, and training on the e-hub system. In all, there were 7 sessions with 130 officers in total attending. ASM has completed stage 1 of their procurement audit, where the revised policy and suite of documents received a satisfactory assurance. All recommendations have been actioned, with the most significant change being the inclusion of a detailed note on contract management. ASM will be starting their stage 2 of the procurement audit in September. This review will focus on the Council's compliance with the procurement policy and will review both high and low value contracts. Happy to take any questions.
Okay, members, as well as the progress update on procurement. Any questions?
Yeah, just a brief question. Before Christmas in the SBNO, there was a paper came up on procurement, and I had asked for some brief training for councillors. I know you said you get back on that after the training for the officers. Is that something we're going to look at in the training for the audit committee going forward? I don't mean the in-depth training of procurement, but just an overview for councillors.
We'll probably run that separately from the training from the audit committee, because it is just quite a meaty piece of training. So that's something I've spoken to Eileen about with regard to the elected members training programme. So that's definitely something that we follow through on this year.
Okay, thanks, Councillor Byrne. Members content to note the update on procurement. And that takes us to item 13, which is training for members. Darina?
Thank you, Chair. Members, you'll be aware that when the Audit Committee Chair had completed the self-assessment review of the Audit Committee, one of the recommendations was that it might be helpful for members to receive some quite detailed training on the role of the Audit Committee and the role of an Audit Committee member. We are proposing here at 2.1 a format of to run a training course for yourselves that would see the Northern Ireland Audit Office present to you some of best practice guidance with regard to corporate governance and the role of the Audit Committee. ASM, our internal auditors, assisted by GERD, would then take you through some best practice in risk management, and again tie that into Council's own risk management policy, and then some training on the scrutiny of the annual report and accounts, with SPIPFA leading on that. And also, I know members have received some fraud training recently, but given that it is quite a substantive item on the Audit Committee agenda, we would probably just refresh then your role in regard to fraud and whistleblowing, and that will be delivered in-house. We have the Audit Office and ASM and SIPFA have all kindly agreed to partake in some training, we would still continue to offer one-to-one introductions to any new audit committee members on top of this, which go, and we would still be content for members to attend the Chief Executive Forum audit committee training, which runs twice a year as well. So if members are content, we will probably try and get a date around August time to run that training and try and coordinate diaries accordingly. So really for noting, and if you're content or you, if there's any other areas of training that you wish to be covered, happy to take those on board and incorporate them in, and we'll probably invite you to some training in late August.
Okay, members, any comments? Are you happy to go along the lines as suggested by Dorina? Okay, and could I just as chair encourage where possible that when the training is organised, the members try to attend, even if it's only for part of the day, because it'll be of great use to the audit committee. Again, we'll take that forward, Dorina, and try and to get a suitable date.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Item 14 is the Performance Improvement Plan for 2018-19. And Kate, is Kate here?
No, are
you going to take it, Dorina?
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. Really, members, again, many of you will be familiar with this document. It has been presented to FPNR previously, and it comes to the Audit Committee to note. So this is our Performance Improvement Plan for 18-19, as well as the Looking Back Going Forward document that has also being produced. Members, you're asked to note this document today.
Okay, members, any questions, comments? Okay. Just a quick comment from myself. The role of the Audit Committee is to scrutinise the process, not to obviously get into the detail of the Performance Improvement Plan. And in terms of our role as scrutiny, I'm pleased to see that really that this Performance Improvement Plan has been widely consulted.
Mm-hmm.
And I also like the fact that you said we did, you know, so that really that consultation feedback has been taken on board.
Mm-hmm.
And has been included in the final plan. So just to commend the officers for that. So thanks for that. So members, content then to note item 14. Item 15 is Performance Management for Outcomes, a Good Practice Guide for Public Bodies. And Northern Ireland Office, Colette, you're going to take us through this.
Yes, thank you,
Chair. Thank you.
So this is the first of the two reports we issued this month, or last month in June. So this is one of our good practice guides, which this particular one refers to performance management for outcomes. And the purpose in presenting this report and publishing this report was to help public bodies implement the change to performance management for outcomes. And it really, I suppose, is flowing down from the Programme for Government framework, which councils, of course, have played their part in as well. So the Good Practice Guide brings together best practice and aims to complement current guidance. It also includes some good practice examples within it. I would commend to Council the completion of the Good Practice Self-Assessment Toolkit, which is included within the appendices of the document, and also just the different stages of performance management, which is explained. And I suppose it very much flows from the previous agenda item which you just presented. So I certainly commend this to Council for consideration.
Yeah, okay, thanks for that, Colette. Any questions, comments for Colette? Okay, members, happy to note the report. And that takes us, Colette, then on to item 16, the National Fraud Initiative report.
Yes, Chair, thank you. So this is our National Fraud Initiative report, which we publish every second year. And this is the fifth of the reports which we have produced in this format. So it is actually on the back of five times we have, and councils have been involved with the National Fraud Initiative, which was mentioned earlier. It's a very interesting report because over that five-year period, the first five exercises, which is actually quite a long time, we have seen where there has been a total of almost £35 million recognised as coming, being saved by the public sector in totality from this process. And I suppose what's of interest is that there's a graph on page 5 of the document which shows how that has decreased across the period, and down to only 1.9 million. And I suppose the learning point from that is that this process has now become, I suppose, preventative as opposed to detective.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a really good news story. We're sort of doing ourselves out of the business of National Fraud Initiative almost, but that's very welcome. So as before, the big hits are around the rates, housing benefit, pensioners who there's pensions being collected for people who are already deceased. So those are sort of the key elements which are similar to previous years, but it's to note by council. Thank you.
Okay, Colette, thanks for that. Any questions, comments for Colette on item 16? Colette, just to commend the report, and clearly National Fraud Initiative has been embedded more and more into organisations, and the fact that really that the amount of funds or money's been detected has gone down doesn't necessarily is a good thing for you though, so because it does mean that really that more and more has been detected before this data matching exercise is undertaken, which is good. And all organisations, public bodies, need to be proactive towards counter fraud. One question that I have is so each of them, there's matches or mismatches or whatever the term is for identify really things that really that need to be investigated further by each council. So just doing, I suppose, really is just the new morning down approach to checking for any matches.
We receive a full list of matches, and it's a role that Jared undertakes as part of his audit services remit. Guidance coming from the Northern Ireland Audit Office has been not to necessarily go through every match, but to take a high level approach. I know in the last round, however, the number of matches which we had was relatively small, and Jared was able to go off and pursue each of those, and that is something that he brings to the attention of this audit committee.
Yeah.
So it's something that we partake in fully and follow up in as best we can.
Okay, thanks for that, Rina. So, members,
Chair, just
sorry,
one point for just on that. I'm interested in the rates avoidance, and I brought this up at the SBNR committee, and it's in this report. I suppose it's not just as black and white as the rates avoidance, and some case studies in this report of, I think it's just under a million or 800,000. Some of them are cases where you've got empty homes that are uneven prospects, and they're sent out notices, which the literature from LPS is totally conflicting with sending out a completion notice to them, because on the literature it states that you may not be eligible for rates or have to pay rates if your home is empty, and it's the word may, you know, and it's the legislation that was passed in 2011 that you do have to pay if the completion notice is sent out and they get whatever 18 months or whatever. There is an enormous amount of properties in this district who have been served completion notices, feel with the literature that they have that they are exempt from rates because it's literally the carcass of a building, it's not even prospects. And I know of a number of construction legal challenges on that. And right across in the countryside of this district, there are numerous homes like that. So I don't think it's as black and white. But we all see figures like 800,000 on rates avoidance. And it seems like, you know, there's a lot of people out there avoiding paying rates. I mean, it's the legislation. It's something needs done. I suppose we're in a an environment now where nothing can change, but just to flag that up. And I know that the council is going to be working with LPS going forward, and it's just something that I want to keep banging on about, because the annoying thing for me as a rural councillor is that people with their own family land that want to build at the leisure are now unable to do so with this legislation. Because, you know, if you want to take 5, 6, 7 years, earn a few pounds and throw up your house, you're having a chance, because you're served a completion notice and then you're rated fully 100% rates. So I suppose that's going to be a big chunk of rates avoidance in this district, something that we need to keep dragging up.
Okay. Thanks for that, Councillor Byrne. Members content to note item 16. Members, that takes us on to closed session. Items 17 and 18 is deemed to be exempt under paragraph 3 of part 1 of Schedule 6 of the Local Government Act, Northern Ireland 2014. Information relating to the financial or business affairs of any particular person, including the council holding that information, and the public may by resolution be excluded during this item, these items of business. So could I have a proposer and seconder please to go into closed sessions? Councillor Mulgrew proposes and Councillor Moran second. Thanks for that. And the first, Karina, could you just take us through the decisions that were made during closed session?
Okay, when in closed session, it was agreed on the proposal of Councillor Sharvin, seconded by Councillor Byrne, to note the internal audit plan updated at July 2018 and approve the changes proposed. And it was agreed to note at item 18 the progress to the audit committee from AFM internal auditors.
Okay, thanks for that, Serena. And members, if there's no other business, any other business just before I close the meeting? No? So members, can I thank everyone for their attendance today and for their contribution, and can I particularly thank those members who are not members of the audit committee for their attendance, yourself, Councillor Harvey, and also the other two members that have just left. Thank you.